I'd now like to welcome formally Wendy Fraser, our guest presenter today. Wendy is Chief Executive Officer of Halifax Hospice Halifax, as mentioned earlier. And first, I'll just give you a bit about Wendy's background. I include an apology because I know she brought audiovisual, and today we happen to be unplugged, and not by choice, but by error. So we're unplugged. Okay, no visuals. Wendy grew up in Montreal and settled in Toronto after attending York University, where she majored in psychology. She's been working in the not-for-profit sector for over 30 years. During her time in Toronto, she worked in child and youth mental health, initially as a frontline worker and eventually as a program manager. After spending a vacation in Nova Scotia in 2001 and realizing what she was missing, Wendy, I think a few of us have been there, Wendy responded to the call of her ancestors and moved to Halifax with her partner, her mother, and her pets. Since arriving, she's held leadership positions at a variety of not-for-profit programs, including support services and housing. She was program director at the Phoenix Center for Youth for 4 years, and from 2006 to 2012, she was executive director of supportive housing for young mothers, eventually overseeing its merger with the YMCA, the YWCA. And she then served as director of programs and services at the YWCA Halifax. Wendy is passionate about the need to bring residential hospice to Halifax. Having lost both her parents in the past 7 years, one in hospice and one in hospital, Wendy has become keenly aware of many of the strengths and limitations of end-of-life care in Canada. We now welcome Wendy to tell us about this essential initiative. Thank you for coming.
Thanks very much. I'm going to wing this out without my PowerPoint. I didn't realize how dependent I'd gotten on my PowerPoint. So it's good practice. Maybe what I'll do is first just tell you a little bit about myself and why I got involved in hospice, and then I'll tell you a little more about Hospice Halifax. As was mentioned, my dad died in a hospice in Montreal in 2009, and he'd had a stroke, so he was, had just retired, was washing the car, and all of a sudden had a massive stroke. And by the time I got there, he'd been in the neurological hospital in Montreal, and the plan was to try and get him to another hospital closer to the hospice. There was all sorts of machinations. As any of you have been in hospital with someone know, it can be a very stressful time. And we're trying really hard to be able to get him to this other hospital, but they wouldn't transfer him without there being a bed. And finally, a bed came up. I have this memory that I was in this other hospital for a week, but it was really just 2 days. The hospice, I feel like I was there for 2 days, but I was actually there for a week. We finally had him transferred to the West Island in Montreal. pardon me. And when they got there, there was no bed. And so he was left in the emergency hallway in a gurney. My brother could not bear that, so he spent the night lying under the gurney because he was afraid that my father would die alone in a hallway. If my dad had lived here at this point in time, that's probably where the story would have ended. But it didn't, and we got him into a room briefly. Again, lots of stress. Those of you who have used had somebody, pardon me, ill in a hospital know that they're very busy places. The staff have lots going on. And frankly, he's on an acute care ward, and he's the guy that was dying. There was no question he wasn't going to survive the stroke. He wasn't top priority. But he still showed signs of discomfort. And so there was lots of advocacy. And because I'm the social worker of the family, I was sent to the nurse's station five times an hour to ask them to come and do something or other. For my dad. It was very stressful for everybody. And then we got a spot at the hospice, which was close by. And it felt like for days I had been trying to convince people that my father was a person who still needed to be treated with respect and dignity. We got to the hospice, and when I arrived at the hospice, the psychologist asked what kind of music my dad liked. So all of a sudden, we weren't just talking about, you know, whether I could get him pain medication, but what kind of music. I could have said Frank Sinatra or Tony Bennett or Swing, things that I would have liked listening to. But instead, I blurted out he liked bagpipe music. She said, oh, how fantastic. My daughter's a master piper. She has a set of mini pipes. She'll come in and play for him tomorrow. It brings tears to my eyes now, the relief I felt to feel like my dad was all of a sudden a person again. I tell the story often because it's the best way I can describe what hospice is, what makes it different than a hospital. You know, when we were there, as I said, we were there for nearly a week. There was my dad's brother, my uncle flew in from BC, my cousins were there. At one point there were probably 15 of us in a room drinking martinis. Nobody liked martinis except my father, but we had to honor him in some way. You know, pets were welcome. My stepmother could stay there every night with him. Really, we were taken care of. As much as all of my dad's needs were taken care of, family really had time to be a family and be together. Just this last spring, my stepmom died, and when I went to see her, she'd gotten a diagnosis, and she knew that it was terminal and it was going to be fairly quick. I went and said to her, you know, how are you feeling about this? Are you scared? And she said, no, I'm not scared. I would have liked a little more time. But, you know, I had a good man, good vacations, nice cars. And I know where I'm going to. And I feel safe there. And she didn't want anybody to be taken care of at her home. We know that 80% of us want to die at home. But only 20% are actually able to. She didn't want to die at home. She knew what the hospice was and what it was going to do, and she was quite determined that as soon as she felt any challenges with the mobility, or if she felt that my stepsister was going to have to become more caregiver than daughter, she would go to the hospice, which is exactly what she did, and I think that it was a relief for all of us. In contrast, my mom, when I moved here 15 years ago, she followed. My mom and I have always somehow lived about a block and a half apart, so that 3 months that before she moved out here was some stressful for her. She liked the idea that I was right around the corner. So she loved Halifax. She was here with me for 10 years, and she got a cancer diagnosis 3 years ago. And I still wanted there to be a hospice for my mom. I felt like we could probably take care of her. My partner and I have financial capacity, we have physical capacity, and so I didn't want her to be in a hospital, so we brought her home. And 2 days in, the second night, she had a medication-induced delirium, which is not uncommon. Luckily for her, it wasn't scary. For some people, it can be very scary. She was like talking about the 57 Chevy she should have bought and how much my grandmother liked her better than her brothers, which she didn't believe the rest of the time. So it was nice that she was in a fairly happy place, but we became very stressed. She was up all night with the delirium. I was still working. And all of a sudden, even with the maximum continuing care support we could get, we realized it was more than we could do, just two of us. My partner travels a lot, and just being able to transfer her in bed and make her comfortable as one person is very, very challenging. I also wanted that time to be able to hold her hand and talk to her, not figure out how can I get her onto the toilet or into the tub and have her make sure that she doesn't fall. And eventually she went back to the hospital and she died in the palliative care unit. I have nothing negative to say about the palliative care. They are incredible, and we are very fortunate as a city to have a really strong palliative care network. But it is still different. It's not home-like. It's a loud, noisy hospital with people coming in and out. My mom had intractable nausea, and she was so concerned that the woman on the other side of the half wall was going to die listening to my mother be sick. She was shamed over it. She was really uncomfortable. And I felt like this is just wrong. Here my dad wasn't really conscious at all. We really benefited from the hospice. My mom, up until, you know, 12 hours before she died, was talking and engaged and part of the world. And she had a really challenging place to die. It is not a good use. Never mind, I have, you know, I'm telling you this story based on a personal experience with hospice. But hospice is a much better model for us as a community, both for what it does for our families and for what it costs. It costs about $1,200 a day for somebody to die in an acute care bed. It costs $475 a day for somebody to die in hospice. We intend to fundraise half of that. So all of a sudden, the cost to government goes from $1,200 a day to about $250. It's obviously significant, and we have, realistically, you know, the doctors called me part of the gray tsunami. Baby boomers and older are a major part of our population now. And we need to make sure that we're providing service that's both humane and supportive and dignified, and that we can afford it. Hospice Halifax has been around for 15 years. We started by providing bereavement support. We have bereavement support groups. We also had some drop-in programs called the Living Room for people who had an end-of-life diagnosis, still had mobility, wanted to be with people who were going through something similar, and sometimes it was a bit of a break for caregivers and a little bit of respite. We also were trying to look at ways that we can support people at home. Always the intention was to build a hospice. And so we had a place in Bedford, and in the last 5 years it felt like we need to really kind of scale back the other things so that we can put all of our effort into getting a hospice. So a year ago, we moved into the two gray houses on the AST campus. There's two big old gray houses on Franklin Street. We don't know right now. The original intention was to renovate them. They're old houses, and hospices require a lot of structure because you have a lot of heavy equipment. The beds themselves are super heavy. So we're in the middle of working with our architect to figure out what's going to work and what will be the best. And we're getting ready to launch a capital campaign. The hope is that we'll be able to open the hospice in early 2018. It's finally a place where we're this close. The health authority has just agreed in the spring that they'll fund us for 50% of the operating. And as I said, we're starting to raise money for the actual building and to build it. We feel really fortunate to have this site. While we have no particular religious affiliation, it is really nice to know that AST intends to have some of their pastoral counseling students do training there. So people will, should they have spiritual needs and connections, then we'll be able to provide that. Hospice is no cost to the people who will be using it. And what, as I said, what we know is that while 80% of us die at home, want to die at home, only 20% can. And it's, you know, I have a graph on my non-existent PowerPoint that shows you how that happens, and that really it happens in the last 30 days of life generally. And it's this kind of, you know, people start at home and then there's just a steep trajectory to hospital. And usually that's driven by not necessarily having a huge support network who can take care of you all the time, having complications as things get more difficult towards end of life, or having challenges managing pain and needing something that will happen quickly. So it tends to be that they go into hospital to have something managed, but then they don't come out. And what we know is that right now there are 28 to 35 people in HRM hospitals who are dying who would be well served by being in hospice. For those of you who don't know about hospice, hospice is well known across Canada. It's just not well known here. There's, I believe, 88 across the country. Ontario, BC, and Alberta have particularly the most. We don't have any right now in Nova Scotia, and neither does Newfoundland. And neither does the North. All the other provinces have a number of them. And what is really key about hospice is that it is meant to be home-like. I was just in Boston. I visited 5 hospices in Boston. And, you know, we're having discussions about the oxygen and whether you bring it in, because if you lived at home, you wouldn't have oxygen popping out of your wall. You would bring it in. And is that more home-like? Or I went to this one hospice where they had created a way to hide the oxygen behind artwork. So they dug out the walls so you could take the artwork and move it over and if you needed it, and the rest of the time you wouldn't. There's no overhead fluorescent lights. Everybody has access to the outdoors. Our intention is that we'll have actually the rooms you'll be able to walk outside. And there's some, it's interesting because some hospices think it's the worst idea ever. You could lose somebody or they'd wander outside. And then the hospices that have access out of the bedrooms say it's the most important thing they have in their hospice. And that people, the idea of being able to be rolled outside and have the sun on your face. I have a photo from a hospice in Minnesota where it's a police officer. And I particularly like the photos because she had had chemotherapy, and you can't really tell by looking if it's a man or a woman. So whoever looks at it presumes it's their own gender. And all she wanted was to see her horse. She was in the horse part of the police. And they brought the horse in. And the picture is this giant horse leaning over the bed with her hugging it. And evidently she died about 2 hours later. That's what hospice is about. And not that I'm saying that we're going to be bringing a whole lot of horses through. I don't know how that's going to happen. But it is about making sure that we honor what's important to each individual person. And if that is what music they listen to, or what animal they have there, or what food they eat, it needs to be specialized. It needs to be honored during that time. And families need to be supported so that they can really have that precious time to be with their loved one, to hold their hand, to tell them that they love them, to talk about what they might need to talk about, not to worry about managing their pain and medication. So it's very difficult when you don't know what it is to really imagine it. But as we were doing hospice standards with the province, we were talking about things that we want to build into standards, like lamps in every room, that you don't have, you know, all sorts of things coming out of the wall that look medical, that everybody has a window that opens, if not actual access to the outside. The one in Boston, they had 2 glass doors in each room, and I said, why 2? And she said, well, it's really hard to get a gurney out with 1, and if you open it up, people will spend their whole day outside. And she took me outside. The other thing with hospices, they tend to have beautiful gardens. It's really meant to be a place of peace and tranquility and beauty. And so she brought me out to the deck, which was a beautiful little patio, beautiful gardens in front of it. And she said, just last week, one of our residents' sons got married here, and we were able to bring her out onto the deck, sit her up in bed, and she could have watch the marriage right in front of her in the gardens. So these are the kind of things that are what hospice is about. Certainly, we will have medical staff. We'll have a nurse. 3 nurses on during the day, 2 at night. We'll have a palliative care doctor there who's will kind of do rounds daily to manage medication and that kind of thing. But really what it's about is making a home for someone, but taking away all the worry and the stress. Hospice is about comfort. And so, you know, one of the things that people often wonder about is treatment and stuff. Generally, people who are coming to hospice are no longer doing treatment. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't provide them with comfort care. So, you know, oxygen in the wall is obviously important if somebody's having challenges breathing to their comfort. So the only kind of treatment that would happen would be to make the person comfortable. It's a rarefied world, hospice. I feel really blessed to be a part of it. I've never met such happy staff in my life. People have this tendency to think that this is a sad, depressing thing, and who would want to work with people dying all the time? How can you manage that? And that's not what I find ever. I find that staff have very often left hospitals, better paying jobs, because they so value being able to provide this kind of support at this time of life. They are incredibly loving, and I think that they feel that it's a gift that they can offer to try and help someone have a good death. You know, we know that 97% of pain can be managed as long as you're able to be there right away and supporting that person. And so if you have all that medical stuff in place, but you don't have the medical institution around you, and you can really feel like it's a beautiful place to be, and that you're at a home, we hope to be able to be as close as we can to the benefits of somebody's home. So, just another quick story. I was in when I was in Boston last week. I went into the kitchen there preparing lunches, and as you can imagine, there's not a whole lot of eating that goes on for most people at end of life. So there's lots of puddings and Jello, and I said, "What do you go through the most food-wise?" And she said, ice cream, bar none ice cream. We'll go through buckets and buckets of ice cream every week. So I kind of had this picture that I would see a tray with a little top and all that. And then I see that the volunteer, and just let me take a second to say, hospice, part of why hospice is so inexpensive is because it's completely supported by volunteers. So while we have professional staff in the key roles, most hospices have 60 to 100 active volunteers working as part of the organization, whether it's gardening or it's making lunches or whatever. And as I saw them setting up these beautiful trays, you know, the kind of tray you would kind of imagine somebody would bring you when you're sick in bed, with beautiful little handmade table mats on them, and every single one had a flower. They have an arrangement with the funeral homes where once the funeral home's done with the flowers, they send them back, and then there's four volunteers who take them all apart and then use them so that at every single meal somebody gets a little vase, ice cream often, and it's made beautiful. It's those little things that are important at the end of life, and that's what we want to be able to provide for Halifax. So I'm really pleased to have this opportunity. I'm, you know, the most important thing that we can get from you. Well, money's always important. It's not the most important. The most important is to have champions who know about hospice and who can speak about it. We don't know what we don't know, and because there's never been one in Halifax, people don't really understand what the value is or what the need is. So if I have 25 or 35 or 40, how many of you there are here, new champions who are out there knowing about hospice and speaking about it, then my work here is done. So thanks very much. I don't know time-wise where I'm at. Hopefully I'm good. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you all about this. So thanks a lot. Okay.